I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Come for Supper. I'm Alexandra Dudley, food writer, cook, and serial dinner party host. So I thought it'd be fun to sit down with people who share that love for food, chat about life, and learn a little bit more about how they like to serve supper. I speak to chefs, restaurateurs, artists, actors, authors, and pretty much anyone who likes to entertain. If you're new to the podcast, make sure you click subscribe. And if you enjoy it, rate it, review it, share it, and tell your friends, as it makes all the difference. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. My guest in the studio today is a man who has worked in restaurants nearly all his life. He is father to three restaurants, as well as two actual children, and is the author of 5 cookbooks. He has appeared on the BBC's Great British Menu and the ever-popular Saturday Kitchen. And when it comes to cooking fish, there really is no better expert. It's Nathan Outlaw.
Hello.
Hello, how are you? Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
So where have you come from today?
I woke up this morning in Cornwall. About sort of 5:30, left at 6 and then got on the train, come up all the way to Paddington and then headed over to my restaurant Siren in Belgravia, but it's near Victoria. So it's in between both.
Really. Depends who you're speaking to.
And then I've just done lunch service and then come over to see you.
Nice. And then you've got dinner service this evening.
Yeah. They've got to go back and make sure they're doing everything right. Sure they are.
It's a long journey, that. How long is that journey then?
In total, it takes anything between 3.5 and 4 hours. There's a few problems with the lines this morning, but usually I can do it from 4 hours is a good run.
Okay.
But it's good. I mean, it's sort of some time for myself. You know, it's the only time probably in the whole of my week that I get to just be on my own, which is quite nice sometimes.
Yeah.
So trains get things nice. Done, yeah.
Yeah, no, we were saying before we turned this on that you were talking about how you have written many books on the train.
It's good
book writing.
I think for all but the first one, it's pretty much been written on the train, either with a pen and paper or with an iPad. And yeah, so it's been very productive.
Yeah. Well done. God, I'm rubbish on trains. I just tend to eat when I'm on a train. That's what I mean, eating for 5 hours, though.
Yeah, well.
It can't be done.
It's not a bad thing.
So I know that your father was a chef.
Yep.
Was it him that kind of instilled that itch to get into chef life?
Yeah, well, my dad's still a chef now. He actually works at Siren.
Is
the
he?
Glory. Yeah, he's still there now. So he's 64.
That's brilliant. Yeah. So what's he doing?
Well, he does a bit of, he helps out with the prep. So
yeah.
He just sort of, because he's an experience that's been, he's been doing it since he was 14 as well. And then he sort of helps out in the garden as well. So he's got a nice garden there. So he's got green fingers and he gets in the garden. We
Handy.
Do grow a lot of herbs there and for the restaurant. So yeah, I'll put him to good use.
Okay, well done. So can you take us back a little bit and then talk about that initial journey into the kitchen? So you were 14, your father was a chef.
Well, I think, you know, because from ever, you know, my first earliest memories of being alive has always mm-hmm. been around cooking. Yeah, so you know, I think I used to get taken into work. And my mum, she was a teacher, now she's my PA, but before being a teacher, she was sort of in the industry as well, mm-hmm. sort of working front house. So I've always just been around hospitality. So it's a real sort of familiar world to me. And I think what got me really interested in cooking was being part of a team. I mm-hmm. always loved the sort of the camaraderie of like a team in a kitchen, and even at a young age, like 8 years old. So, for example, I'll be there like buttering toast on a Saturday morning, helping out with the breakfast shift. It was just the noise and the smells and the environment and everything that was going on. You know, it was exciting, but it was intriguing, and I always learned stuff. I'm not a great person for learning, like reading a book or sort of that sort of typical school
studious yeah
stuff. Yeah, I mean, I'm always good. If you show me something once, I can do it again and again. That is sort of, I suppose, with cooking and being in a restaurant, you that's the sort of thing you do, you know. So yeah, from a young age I was quite competent doing sort of what people might think as easy jobs, but you know, picking parsley, all that sort of stuff. But I used to love it, and I time myself. I'm a bit weird. I go, I can do it faster next time.
Really?
I do.
So, and that's, like peeling garlic clothes.
Yeah. The most sort of like what some people think of boring jobs, I just make them fun. Yeah, and I think that even to today, I sort of will make the most boring. Yeah, if something is a bit laborious and a bit boring, I'll make it into a bit of fun, even with the chefs I got now, and sort of like, you know, challenge yourself, and it's good fun.
So we, do you have a way to make podding broad beans fun? I always find that a serious labour of love.
Usually trying not to get them all on the floor. That's usually they go everywhere. No, I mean, usually if it's something like that and there's a lot of things to do, I'll make it a bit of a game even with all the guys now, and we just all do it. Who can do it the fastest is usually the easiest thing to do. But try not to eat too many as well.
I know. That's all. I sometimes eat the skins as well. It's zero waste.
When they're
it's
at
great.
Their best, it's fine.
Exactly. Yeah. So you trained at college in Broadstairs, didn't you, as well, by the sea? Lots of by the sea. Mm. Because you are the fishy expert, you know, that you know your fish. When did it become apparent that that was going to be something that was kind of a focal point for you?
I've always been intrigued by the sea.
Yeah.
By like not necessarily the fish, but just by the ocean. I think it's something about the ocean. Yeah, whether it's it could be the calmest day and it's like a meal pour. It could be the roughest day and sort of all the waves are crashing and it's quite dramatic. And I just think, and also like fishermen in general have always, you know, I remember some of my earliest memories of going to places like Hastings when I was a kid, because we grew up in just outside Mason, a place called Snodden. It's a little village, well, it was a village, now it's a town. I suppose for my parents, a cheap day out would be a quick shoot down to one, like somewhere like Hastings, wasn't too far. And I always remember like all the boats coming in and the fishermen with all putting all their fish onto the slabs. And it was just, I suppose subconsciously, I sort of took it all in and it wasn't like sort of always in there and touching everything. I sort of wouldn't touch anything. So I was, it's obviously a good child. the whole sort of like being by the sea is just always been calming for me. So I mean we spent later on in my career, I spent a few years in Middle Earth, what I call Middle Earth, like the Cotswolds area, and I hated it because of that reason, is just not being near the sea. And even to this day, I probably even come into London for a couple of days like I do to the siren, I sort of like start to shake a little bit.
It does have a real kind of healing quality about it. But that, I also think fishermen, because you also do quite a lot of charity work with kind of fishermen's...
Yeah, we do. We do a lot with...
keeping the fishermen going, basically.
Our main charities that we support with through the restaurants and through what we do is Fishermen's Mission, the RNLI, Surfers Against Sewage, but that's more to do less surfing. Obviously, my physique doesn't lead to surfing.
Now
but
I feel like
more...
you could be a surfer. Don't knock yourself down.
I went to Cornwall at 19 to be a surfer.
To surf. That's brilliant.
So that's more like the plastic and the waste and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, so that's three of the charities that we support. And it's all got a link to the sea, which is important when my livelihood is a seafood chef and most of my...
Do you fish?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean, I sort of fish recreationally, I suppose that's the word, and just for fun, really. I mean, I don't do it too seriously. I'm not into lake fishing and river fishing. I like sea fishing.
Waiting around.
Yeah, I mean,
fishing is fun.
Mackerel is fun.
I've been mackerel fishing.
Yeah, people sort of say, they see these mackerel chips and I think it's a bit boring. It's not. It's a real fun thing to do, mackerel fishing. You catch a whole sort of line full of mackerel, you'll know about it.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about entertaining.
Right.
Because I know that you like cooking. Do you like entertaining? Do you like having lots of people over?
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I, Rachel, we were at a stage of our lives where our kids are sort of teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting to the point where I think we're coming into a sort of time when we're going to do a lot of entertaining.
Their birthdays and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, and they're getting a bit older, so they want to do more adult things. And they don't want to know us, really. So they're going to go off and do their thing, and we're going to have time, a lot of spare time. So, I think in the future I'm going to do a lot more entertaining. The entertaining we probably have done over the last, say, 5 or 6 years is more family stuff. So a lot more sort of, buffets and lots of barbecues and things like that. Not so much dinner parties, because I think, we're not that discerning. I mean, I do that sort of thing every day.
Yeah, in the restaurant.
Yeah. Like so I usually end up doing a lot more, so entertaining is just a bit more of a gathering.
Yeah.
You know, them sort of things. So mainly family, sometimes staff as well. Sometimes we do like staff things together, which is nice. And that's it's a form of entertaining, controlling the masses.
Yeah.
I do love cooking for other people. Yeah.
And what kind of thing do you cook?
I'd probably say if doesn't matter what the weather is, I'll try and do a barbecue. Because I think barbecue for me, I think especially with cooking for a lot of people, is a good way of doing it. And it's sort of, it's the complete opposite of what I do day in, day out. It's sort of like you can cook for a lot of people with a big, you know, big chunk of meat or a couple of big whole fish and a few salads. And then it's not too, you can enjoy it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always aware.
It's quite sociable as well. You can stand around, chat.
Exactly. And I'm always aware of, like, when you see, I've been to dinner parties, I've been to say things in the past where the host's so stressed.
Oh, because, it's awful. Yeah.
And
Rule number one, don't be stressed out.
Exactly. And it's not fun for anyone.
Yeah.
So I always find that when you're entertaining, you can't do enough preparation before.
Yeah.
Or you do the opposite and completely involve everybody in that preparation. Mm-hmm. So you start with nothing and say, look, guys, you
get everybody on the beans.
Everyone does it, yeah. So we either do one thing or the other. But you need to be a bit organised, I think.
So you will cook fish sometimes when you're entertaining?
Yeah. No, I do.
I bet people want it.
Definitely.
You know, they expect it.
They sort of expect it, yeah. I mean, I think, we've cooked a few Christmas dinners that have been fish, which have been good fun.
Really?
Fish.
Oh, that's... So it kind of instead of a turkey or a goose or something.
We've done
I'd like that.
Whole turbots, whole monkfish, we've done whole bass
whole
before.
Turbot, that's so delicious.
Yeah, it is nice. And you can add Christmassy flavours to it. To be honest with you, I mean, turkey half the time doesn't taste
anyway. It's not great anyway.
So, that goes down well. My kids are big lovers of fish. You know,
thank
they've got
goodness.
No choice. doing seafood's a good thing. Yeah, I mean, we got a really cool pizza oven back in the summer, which was good fun, and I think my daughter had.
I've got a really good pizza oven.
Is it like one of them Rockbox ones?
It's actually called Uni, but it's similar.
Ones.
Yeah, it's quite big actually. You could put a whole fish in it. I went for the big one and live in this tiny flat, and it's this huge monster of a thing that sits on this bed on the spare bed. But
they are really fun.
Yeah,
they're good for if you got a load of people around, because you can just make, as long as you made the dough, you can just
keep going, and everybody feels like they're getting involved.
I had like 14 or 15 of her friends around, so I was cooking to order. I had loads of fillings and I just sort of made some doughs, and it was a Harry Potter themed party. So,
oh my gosh, sounds like my dream.
So I broke the doughs into the houses.
Oh, my God, brilliant.
Yeah, different yellow and your red and your blue and your green.
So did you have different bases?
Yeah,
kind of butternut squash base or something?
Yeah, I coloured the doughs.
Oh my God, that's so clever.
And then they let them choose whatever they wanted on top, and then made them all. That was good fun.
That is so cool.
Harry
so
Potter.
Slytherin pizzas.
I'm a Hufflepuff, by the way.
So. You're a Hufflepuff, okay. I'm a Ravenclaw.
Oh, okay.
It's all right. I feel like we get on.
It's fine.
We'll get on. Okay, so what about tips for kind of cooking fish? Because I rarely cook fish for kind of when I'm entertaining, unless I do like a big side of salmon, or like everybody will pull out a poached salmon. This is kind of in joke with my family that my mum will always bring out a poached salmon.
Excellent.
But do you have any kind of tips if people do want to cook fish, or even just not for entertaining, but people are often afraid of cooking fish at home?
I think if you're cooking for a lot of people, say doing 10,
you know,
I think you're always better off with fish doing something like a really nice sort of seafood curry or something.
Yeah, or
like
a stew.
That
or
sort of thing, or a stew is really good. If it's just like for a couple, or a dinner party for say two couples or something like that, I think you always got to think about the preparation, because the one tip, fish, once it's cooking, it's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no coming back.
Yeah.
So I always say, like, get everything you're planning to serve with the fish ready. So if your potatoes already roasted, for example, your mash or whatever you do, hot, your sauce is ready, your herbs are in there, if you're putting herbs at the last minute, and have all that ready and hot, then start cooking your fish.
Yeah.
Because once you stick that fish under the grill in the oven,
there's no resting time for fish.
Not really. I mean, if you've got a big thick piece of like monkfish or something like that, you can allow yourself 5 to 10 minutes of resting. And that's probably a good thing for monkfish anyway. But if it's like a thin piece of bream or lemon, so that sort of thinner fish, you need to have everything ready. Plates warm, everyone sat at the table, prep. All the wine poured. It all needs to be ready before you put the fish in. So, I mean, that's probably... And then I think probably don't... I think when cooking fish, just sort of remember that whether you're grilling it on a tray or you're cooking it in a pan, there's so much residual heat when you've turned... Yeah. Either the grill off or your hob off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just remember that even when it's still a little bit raw, that residual heat will probably cook it through.
Yeah.
So there's another thing. So when people overcook their fish, it's usually because they've left it on the grill.
And people
tray
are always afraid of undercooking fish as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but you shouldn't be. Because
you really
you
shouldn't,
eat
yeah.
Oh, raw.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing.
If it's good fish.
It's not like it's a chicken breast or a bit of pork.
Or like a sausage.
Yeah, sausage, yeah.
And you don't want to do that.
But yeah, I mean, that's another good thing for parties. I mean, cooking seafood is don't cook it. That's another thing. Is like, don't cook it.
Right. Well, you could do a fish pie.
Yeah,
fish people love a fish pie.
Cured fish is good.
Yeah, or big hot like smoked salmon, that kind of thing. Hot roast salmon. I mean,
definitely. Yeah, I mean that sort of thing. I mean, it's good. I mean, yeah, you can't go wrong with a fish pie though. You're right. Yeah.
You really can't. A good fish pie is just so great.
Yeah, 30-40 people. Yeah, fish pie.
Roll it out. And what about a time when kind of things haven't gone well, either when you're entertaining or in the restaurant? Because I think people always think that everything goes smoothly for kind of top chefs who know what they're doing, but I'm sure it hasn't always been the case.
It never does. Any day. At home, my biggest downfall usually is forgetting something.
Okay.
So, because I'm so used to everything to hand. So if I go to I need some milk, it's there.
Yeah,
it'll work. But at home, you always forget something. And that's the thing. I mean, I've always... the other day I started making some mayonnaise and I realised I've got no eggs. Yeah, that sort of thing goes wrong.
Yeah, okay, that's a problem.
Work-wise, I mean, the worst thing I think I've probably done is miscalculated. I did a function for like 120 people and miscalculated by 20. So there was quite a rush when I was trying to make this pea soup, which
so you
we were
to
doing.
Quickly do it again.
It's all being served. So like 80 of the plates are already out into the dining room. And then I'm realising, if I can't remember, it was one of the chefs, I said, where's the next soup? Bring it up. There's none left, Jeff. Oh my God. So yeah, them sort of things. It's usually, it's organisation. Yeah. In the actual workplace, it's always down to someone not counting something. Chefs are not great at counting.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was going to ask you that about recipe writing because do you kind of work kind of restaurant recipes into your cookbooks or are you going completely from scratch? Because the quantities are so different.
Yeah, I would say that my actual food style is quite simple. So I, in terms of turning my restaurant dishes into home dishes, it's quite straightforward. There's nothing that's too arduous and out there and weird ingredients because that's not what I like anyway. I haven't got the patience to be standing there cutting things into little pretty pictures anyway. So, but in terms of... the actual sort of measurements and stuff. Yeah, when you're downscaling, because most things I make is like 10 times 10 times, whatever. So you do find, so that's why I've always done all the cookery books myself. So I've done all the development, all the pictures you see in any of the books and photographs are all done by me and I've cooked everything. So, and that way I sort of write the recipes in my head so I can cook just using my what's in there in my brain and then I jot all the recipes down, and then when it actually comes to doing the photo shoots, I have all my recipes out, and as I'm doing them I sort of adjust them exactly as they should be. So and that seems to work for me, and I think everyone's I found out from like the publishers that I've had in, they said you do it completely different. No, I've never seen anyone do it that way. As most people have, like, you could have a phone,
a person to do that for you.
But I just like to be able to, and I suppose it's like knowing that if there's a recipe out there and someone is going to make my fish pie
that
for
it
10
works.
People, that
yeah.
it works. So, and touch wood so far, I've not had any so I've not had any angry people like sort of ringing me up and saying your real recipe doesn't work, so hopefully it works.
But you'd be amazed at how many recipes don't work. My mother has this theory that just most recipes don't work.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to, I mean, I did one book, this my home kitchen book, which was not the last one but the one before, I really used the most crappiest cooking equipment I could possibly use. I actually, it's basically is one up from a baby Belin oven with two rings. I used all really like basic pans and stuff like that just to make sure that, yeah, not only
the, anybody
the,
could
the,
do it.
Not only the sort of the temperatures and the times were right, but I'm using the most basic stuff. Mm-hmm. So most people that do cook at home have now got really good. Yeah, there's nice pans out there, and people
fan ovens.
Yeah,
quite
lovely
like that.
Stuff. So, so I cooked it with the most basic equipment I possibly could, which also made in turn because the whole point of writing Home Kitchen was really I set out an idea
is
of
that,
saying
that's the most recent one, isn't
no,
it?
The most no. recent one is Restaurant Nathan, which is the restaurant-y one.
Yeah.
But the one before that was Home Kitchen. I just tried to make it as I wanted my kids to have one book to take to wherever they go on to. It had enough recipes in it that they could survive on that book. Mm-hmm. That was the whole aim of that book was to say, there you go, you don't need any other one. That's the one you need and it'll work. So that's why we set it up and made it, cook it in such a, as if it was like a studio.
Anybody can
student's
use it.
Flat. Yeah,
student.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. My brother's often making kind of recipes from cookbooks and I find it really endearing. He's at university and he'll make it exactly as it is and then send a photo that's sort of plated or kind of photographed exactly how the photo is in the book.
That's
I should get
cool.
him your book.
That's
I should
cool,
definitely get it.
Yeah.
I got him a pasta machine and he loves it. Pasta, you know.
That's good. That's
thing.
A good pasta's yeah. a good
get
thing
him into
to do,
it.
Yeah.
I know that you have a kind of penchant for cookbooks, don't you? How many cookbooks would you say you have?
Currently, I mean, it's we've got to be coming up to 1,000, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that sort of, my wife just thinks I'm mental. Every day there's a delivery.
Are you ordering them or are you getting sent them? Because I'm sure you get sent lots of books.
I do
as
get
well.
Some sent, which is really nice. And it's sort of, it's lovely. I mean, the world we're living in now, it's sort of, the Instagram and stuff like that, social media, it's, my publisher sends them to my chef friends or people that I know and stuff like that, so they can maybe put a little post up and say, well, look, got a new book out. And it's the same likewise. But I think because people do know that I'm sort of collect them and I do actually value them and I've got, it's one of them, my hobbies. I sort of get sent some, but majority of what I buy is sort of trying to find older ones. And like old Elizabeth David books.
Oh, yeah, Elizabeth David.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, so who are your favourite kind of food writers? Maybe a couple of contemporary
say,
and
yeah, I mean,
not contemporary.
Elizabeth David's
so
stuff
great.
Is amazing, even though, and it takes me, because I'm not the best reader, it sounds weird, but even though I just haven't got the attention span, I can only sort of read like one or two recipes at a time to take it in. Mm-hmm. So that's Elizabeth Davis. It takes me a long time to read all the books. There's a lot of books. I think
she's very concise though. And it's almost like the recipes are just kind of like paragraphs. You just sort of, there's no frilly story.
Nothing. No, it's good. That's a good thing. I'd say Simon Hopkinson's my favourite. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of come from a chef background. I love Nigel Slater's stuff as well. I think he's brilliant.
He's a great writer. As well, if you like his writings, actually.
I always benefits for me to know someone's voice and then
when
read
you're reading,
their book.
Interesting.
And I don't know why. It's like when I first read Anthony Bourdain's sort of Kitchen Confidential when it first came out, because I could hear his voice, I read it much better.
Okay,
if that
that's
makes sense,
so
I took
interesting.
It, yeah,
you should try audiobooks as well.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
they're great for the train.
I should do actually. It's good. I mean, I think that's definitely a big thing for me. Rick Stein, obviously, as his best book is, it says Richard Stein on the front. It's English Seafood Cookery, which is a little penguin book which he did before he was on television. I think it's
Don't have that book. I must get that book.
It's very good. Yeah, English Seafood Cookery. It's called
English Seafood Cookery. Okay, is that all the basics?
I think that by the looks of it, I mean, this is not fact, but by the looks of it, when Rick, before he was on TV, Padstow was very quiet in the winter. And I think he sent one year, him and his sous chef, a guy called Paul Sellers, did it. And they must have written and, sort of did this book that came out. And I think he won back then, it was like the Glenfiddich Writers Award, which is a massive thing then. I don't know if it's still going now, but and this was before he was television, so that's why he doesn't say Rick Stein, it says Richard Stein on the front, which is quite funny.
That's
so
great.
But that's if you've got that book, and there's even some things in there that people wouldn't, I always take the mickey out of Rick for this, where he's got anchovy ice cream in it, which is like before, like this is in the late 80s the book came out, so everyone goes about Heston and his wacky ways when Rick was doing it in the 80s. So.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Thank you. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So I'm sure that you've eaten some sensational food during your time, kind of, I'm sure, out and about and in restaurants. Has there been one particular meal or experience that's really stuck with you?
I think probably the first time I went to the Seahorse in Dartmouth, which is Mitch Tonk's, his restaurant, Matt Prowse. They got that really lovely seafood restaurant. That's probably because I love the location of it. Dartmouth obviously got that historical sort of restaurant well with the Angel, with, you know, Carved Angel was the next door to the Seahorse, which was Joyce Molyneux. And so I thought, yeah, that's sort of quite a romantic sort of memory for me, because it's not romantic in a romantic way, but in
a nostalgic way.
Yeah, so that was, and I just thought that the simplicity and the understanding of the Mediterranean flavours and, you know, great fish from Brixham and the surrounding area from Dartmouth was good. I would say when I was at the seafood restaurant, yeah, Rick Stein's been past the first time when I actually worked there, was just a memory that stuck in my head. I was lucky enough when I was 30, and my wife went to the French Laundry in California, which is sort of always one of those, when I was in my 20s cooking as a chef, that was very inspirational sort of restaurant. So to go and see that in the flesh was really amazing. I never expected to get there either. I took my children before Pierre Kaufman shut Kaufman's up at in Knightsbridge. I made sure I took them for a pig's trotter and a pistachio souffle with Pierre. So that's two iconic dishes that I thought that...
Lucky kids.
At the moment, then they probably just went, whatever, Dad. But now, hopefully later on in life,
they'll remember it.
Those dishes, yeah. And I think more recently, I would say I think the guy who's cooking the most imaginative and best food at the moment is Lee Tinnan at Black Axe Mangal, which is in Highbury, and I think it's just way out there and so different. And I just, you know, the imagination, we're coming from that St John background, which again, St John is another one of my favourite restaurants.
St John's
as well.
Amazing.
Coming from that stable, Lee's managed to create this sort of cuisine that's sort of so individual and so original. And I don't think he gets recognition for it. I think it's, and I think
it's really got a good reputation, though, doesn't it?
It's got a great reputation. I mean, the studio we're in here is probably the size of the restaurant as well.
Yeah.
It's not that big. And I think probably at some point you probably need to get to a bigger location, but maybe the beauty of what it is because of the location it's in. So, but yeah, so many great. I've been lucky enough to eat some good meals in my time.
Okay. So top restaurants for kind of Cornwall and London at the moment.
Cornwall, definitely you have to, if you've never been there, you've got to go to the seafood restaurant. Got to go and see Rick's. Yeah, because purely off the back of it being nearly 45 years old. I mean, there's not many restaurants.
Wow, is it that long?
There's not many restaurants in this country that have been going for 45 years.
But the whole place has changed since that restaurant as well. If you look, it's made it.
Yeah, I mean, Rick's done incredible things for not only for British seafood, but for Padstow and Cornwall and putting it on the map. So, and I certainly wouldn't be sitting here if it weren't for him. So, yeah, working for him for 2 years. So I'd say you've got to go there if you're in Cornwall. A newer restaurant, Coombs Head Farm, which is Tom Adams and April Bloomfield's farm and restaurant, and that I think that's fabulous. And you know, obviously Tom used to do the old PickU, and then opened the newer one, which I think is closed now anyway. But so he's completely relocated down to Coombs Head Farm. So them two, I think, are really something special. In London, I'd say you can't, if you're travelling to London for the first time and you've not been anywhere, you've got to go to St John.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go to St John. You know, it's sort of typical, you know, it's British.
Iconic.
Yeah, now. British food. And again, been around for 25 years, brilliant. I think Black X Manigal, if you want to say completely different, I think in London's great. Seafood-wise in London, obviously Siren, I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
But I think you can't go wrong with seeing one of the sort of like Bentleys. I think mm-hmm. it's brilliant for a seafood experience. And even Scots and Sheikies, them sort of places yeah. are great places to hang out. And,
Sheikies yeah. is still quite fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got this little fun thing about it.
Yeah, and I think that's what people are looking for. Well, I know when I go out for a meal, I'm looking for more than just food. I'm looking for it to have fun as well. I love the fun. I know that you've got to know that your money's going to be spent well yeah. as well. But yeah, I don't mind paying anything as long as I have a good time. And the hospitality is great. That's mm-hmm. one thing I think people need to pull their socks up at anything. It's like, you know, you've got to be aware of it. It's not just about the food.
Yeah.
It's way more than that. Yeah. And coming from a chef, that's... Yeah. So it's definitely, and more so, looking for an experience.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Mm.
I read this shocking statistic the other day that as Britons, we export 80% of our crab, which is just mental. And I know that you're a big fan of, you know, buying local and cooking yeah. local. And I'm a big kind of advocate for that. Mm. And I wanted to hear from you, why is it so important to kind of buy and cook locally when we can?
I think it just supports your community where you are. I mean, a lot of these sort of communities outside of cities are under pressure generally, you know, from lots of different sort of industries, not just from hospitality. But in hospitality, if you don't, and sort of like in food production, if you don't support that sort of thing, it's going to go, yeah, simple as that. I mean, in terms of the export, that's purely from the nation historically not being big seafood fans. And I think
it's so weird that. I think it's changing weird. A bit, though.
Oh, yeah, and I think the awareness, I think, with what Rick's done and, you know, with sort of always talking about how good the quality of seafood yeah. is from the UK. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to travel to a few places in the world, and you know, places where people say their seafood's great, but British seafood's amazing. It's,
yeah.
Because of the quality, because of the water temperature, because of the way it's caught, the variety. Yeah, we've got sort of a good 30 different species that you can eat, so that are worthy of going in your mouth. So then there's others as well. But I think, you know, just getting back to the local thing, I mean, there's some amazing local producers and sort of growers and, you know, fishermen and sort of, you know, farmers that are doing some stuff that they're actually being highlighted now. And I think they've been doing it for a long time. I think a lot of these families that you know, find with doing stuff, whether they've been making cheese or growing veg or, you know, also looking after
salmon,
all these sort of things, they've been there for a while, but it's just the massive sort of food and drink sort of explosion, I suppose, mm-hmm. there has been over the last sort of all the time I've been cooking for the last sort of 25 years is really highlighted them. And what you get as well, what's nice about it, if you're going to a local restaurant in an area that's sort of not in a city, you get that sort of sense of where it's from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing about what we do in Cornwall, is that I make sure I get the best ingredients from the area and obviously the seafood. And it sort of shows, it adds to the experience if you're travelling. So
yeah.
not only are you seeing the place or, you know, experiencing where you are and the local attractions, you're also getting a taste of what it's like and even a drink of something. You know, we've got Camel Valley Vineyard, we've got all these lovely sort of places that are doing different sort of gins and different, there's so much stuff now, you know, that you can get when you come to Cornwall, but also to other parts of the UK.
Yeah. It's exciting. Suffolk as well is a big kind of food centre. So we're coming to the end, and I always like to ask my guests kind of what three ingredients would you always advise people to have in the kitchen?
Oh dear. For three things you've always got to have, I think you need I think that vinegars are really
interesting.
Important.
Never had that before. No. Okay, vinegar. It's specific vinegar?
Just a selection.
Okay, so a selection of vinegars. Okay.
Yeah, because vinegars are one of the things. I mean, chefs go on about salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure the season, you see it again on TV or you read it in recipes about how important it is. But I think a little splash of acidity in a lot of things, in all things, I even put a little bit of vinegar in some desserts, just livens the whole thing up. And when I say vinegar, I'll probably mean acid in general, because I think like citrus and stuff like that is good. So I think, yeah, you definitely got to have something in there. And it could be as simple as you're making a Sunday roast and you've got a chicken gravy and you just put a dash of vinegar in it, it just brings the whole thing to life. So I think I always use a lot of vinegar. That's one thing. Good butter.
I think you need to always have,
and it should always be out of the fridge.
Salted butter, unsalted,
I think if you're cooking a lot, you probably want unsalted because you can always add the salt.
Because you control it, yeah.
But if it's just a lovely piece of crusty bread and you've got salted butter. And then another ingredient. Something a bit weird because it's just me, but probably Marmite. I've always got Marmite.
Yeah, Marmite's a good one.
Marmite, I mean, it's like you love it or hate it, but I sort of...
Love it, clearly.
I'm a bit addicted to Marmite. So, and you can actually, I'll put a little bit of that in my gravy as well at home.
Yeah.
Little touch, it's a little secret sort of, sort of ingredient going in there. So, yeah.
Marmite, vinegar, butter and Marmite.
Yeah.
Yum. Great. Also, great combinations as well.
It'd be all right. All in a bit of toast.
I'm throwing an extra one in for you because I know that you're a bit of a music lover. Mm. So these are top three tracks, maybe not for entertaining because, you know, it's a bit of a different vibe, but for prepping. So when you're in the kitchen, top three, because then we can pump up in the atmosphere.
Well, I'm going to go a bit weird. He's got a fire starter by the Prodigy.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, we can't be sitting down having dinner for these.
No, you wouldn't want that. But I think that's sort of, I think I'm going to go for my funeral, I think.
Fire really? Starter.
It'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
because he probably would be burnt, so it'd be a good thing. So, and then, I really like Placebo. Mm-hmm. So I like Nancy Boy by Placebo. That's probably because that reminds me of that album came out. That was their first album when I started working in London in 1994, 1995, it was, I think. And I remember that song. Nancy Boy plus Placebo would be one. And then, probably Joy Division, Love Will Tear Us Apart.
Yeah.
Because I think that is a great, great song. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how many times I listen to that song, I never get bored of it.
Yeah. God, I haven't listened to Joy Division in ages.
That's a reminder. So Joy Division, Placebo and Prodigy.
Okay, great. Good. It's a good trio. Finishing with our last trio then, your top three ultimate dinner party guests. Alive or dead?
Ooh, ultimate.
Yeah.
Probably say... I would say Dave Grohl. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be fun to have him there. And if you've got Dave Grohl, you've got to have Jack Black as well, because I think they're quite both together. And then probably, we have someone quite interesting that could talk a lot.
They'll talk a lot.
Yeah, they would talk a lot. I don't think the other person, they get much of a word in edgeways. I think we need to, how do you reckon? It's hard, that. It's a hard question. There's a lot of people.
Mine changes all the time, to be honest.
Yeah. Probably someone that's just probably not as interesting as they seem, but someone like Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
Because it's a very sort of Nirvana sort of...
Yeah, and nobody knows much about him either still.
No. There's lots of questions to be asked.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, no, we'll kick Kurt Cobain out. I'll go with the Queen.
Okay.
I think she's quite interesting.
Okay, yeah, the Queen. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
I think she is quite interesting.
Yeah, but she's got some stories, but she's got to be... she can't hold back. She's got to tell us the truth.
I bet it. So what's in store for you for the rest of the new year, I guess?
This year we've got, obviously we just opened Siren, so that's quite new. It's only just come up to 6 months, so busy working on that and making sure that's right. Next year I'm spending most of my time in my garden.
Very nice.
And that's purely because I'm starting to grow all the stuff for the restaurants in Cornwall, which, with the fish being unique, and it's obviously not unique as if no one's seen it before, but it's because it's so good where we get it. I'm trying to add the sort of the support actors to everything. So growing it ourselves or growing it with the growers that are very close to us. And then sort of probably looking at getting down an idea for, well, two or three ideas for new books as well. Yeah.
Exciting. Yeah, exciting times ahead.
Yeah. Nonstop.
Yeah, I can imagine. And now you're going back to service as well. Amazing. Yep. Amazing man. Well, thank you so much for that. That was brilliant. Thank you for coming on. Yeah. Thanks
a lot.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you liked it, rate it, review it, talk about it, share it, and invite your friends round for supper.
This has been a Studio 71 production. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.